You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate
and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world.
And now, innovation thought leader
and your super fly host,
Tamara Kleinberg.
Hey, Launch Streeters, Tamara here, your host and the person that believes that rock, paper, scissors is the best way to solve any disagreement, personal or professional. Okay, this is the third of the three-part series with Anthony Lombatos from Footers Catering and the IQE partner. We take a slightly different approach in this conversation. Because Anthony is so well-respected in the events and hospitality world, he often gets asked to speak at conferences and consult other companies on how to achieve the growth he's had. Every time he does that, he talks about the importance of innovation and the power of the IQE, the Innovation Quotient Edge assessment, to help you make innovation tangible and to bring innovation to life. I wanted to better understand why the events and hospitality world needs more innovation and how the IQE helps them deal with the challenges they're facing. And by the way, I think a lot of these challenges will sound very familiar to many of you out there, you know, changing customer expectations, workforce challenges, legacy thinking, new competition. So I wanted to dig into that because I think his experience with teaching others about the IQE and helping them solve challenges through innovation is something that we can all apply to our worlds. And you know, what I love about my conversations with Anthony is that they are real world. He has years of experience. He's doing it every single day. And I think you'll find some of his answers surprising. I know I did. So let's go. All right. Anthony is back yet again for one of these incredible conversations. I know that if you're listening, you've gotten a ton of value. So get ready for another round of incredible high impact value, or as Anthony would say, awesomeness. So Anthony is out there. He gets asked a lot because of the company he's built and some of the things he's done in the hospitality and events world to speak about having a culture of innovation and kind of driving that success through that. So Anthony, I'd love to start out of the gate by just talking from your perspective, high level, kind of what's happening in the hospitality and events world that makes innovation so important. I don't want to be assumptive and assume it's the same as everybody else.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's always going to be overlap, but the cool thing is that, you know, hospitality is ripe for innovation. Yeah. You know, on some level, yes, we're doing the same thing we've been doing for years, serving food to people.
Right.
and at some point, there's things that don't change. On the flip side, you could argue that everything has changed in terms of how that's done. And so whether it's, you know, catering or whether it's events or whether it's, you know, all the people that work within the events industry, the photographers, the DJs, the AV.
It's a huge industry.
It really is. And especially here in Colorado, it's one of the, I think it's the third or fourth largest industry by employment.
Oh, wow.
Here
I mean, it
Colorado.
Makes sense with the mountains. Yeah.
It's a significant part of what we of our community here, but also there's such a push, especially with parties, to make them better, to make them cooler, to make them more innovative, to do unique things. Most people don't call you up and say, "Hey, you know, let's do the same party we did last year. Do the same menu.
Repeat it all. Nothing new."
That doesn't happen very often.
That's a great point, though, to think about the pressure of wowing your clients every year in a different way. They're not actually coming back to you for a grande non-fat latte every time.
Right, exactly. So it has to be unique. It has to be different. You think about, you know, we do a lot of work with nonprofits. And so when they're looking at their fundraising galas, we talk to them a lot that they're really fighting for entertainment dollars. There's so many nonprofits in the area and so many great causes
right. That
it's not enough to just say, "Hey, we're a great cause, give us money." They have to put something on that people say, "I'm excited to go to this and I'm going to, you know, go to this gala as opposed to go to a sporting event or going to the theater or going, you know, out to a really fancy dinner." So everything has to kind of coincide with that. And we are put to the challenge each year by a lot of our repeat clients to, okay, what can you come up with this year? What do you got? Here's our idea. Here's our theme. How can you partner with that and do something cool? And I think our team really thrives on that, to come up with something new and creative that, that fits their idea, and collaborate with some of our clients on that. And I think that's very similar among a lot of people within the hospitality industry that are constantly being pushed to be better and do something more innovative. And I think that's everybody. I mean, you look at hotels and how they differentiate themselves. Yeah. They're doing a better and better job, and because they're having to compete with, you know, caterers and other organizations. And, you know, the traditional idea of this rubber chicken dinner is really going by the wayside. Think about, yeah.
That's funny when you say it that way.
You know, what you would historically expect from a large gala or dinner. There's a lot of companies that have figured out how not to do that. And so the bar has been raised, which is exciting, and we want to be part of that.
You know, you had said in the first podcast that we did together in the series that you didn't want to do what you were doing 30 years ago. And right. You and I both talk about kind of the tombstone slide, the size Sears, Kodak, right? Because yeah. They were doing, who else is on there? BlackBerry, Blockbuster. Uh-huh. I know, just a moment of pain for those iconic businesses that were once leading their categories. But
right. But
what you're saying really fits into that. Like if you think that doing what you used to do is going to work today, it's not. And I'll just add to that very quickly, and stop me if I've told you the story about the rental car. Have I told you this already?
I don't think so.
Okay, so this happened recently. I was in line for a rental car. I rarely do rental cars. I usually do an Uber, but I had to go an hour and a half away. And I'm in line. The line's going fine. Like there are no problems happening. But the one guy turned to the guy next to me, next to him, and he turned to him and he said, I literally cannot wait for the entire rental car industry to go get down in flames. This thing is so archaic. I died. I was like, oh my God, manna from heaven. Like, thank you. Thank you. Like I wanted his autograph. He had no idea who was standing behind him. And then he went up to the counter. He got his car. He said, thank you. He wasn't upset. And then he got his car and he left. And I thought, oh my gosh, how many times are customers checking into a hotel, getting the rubber chicken dinner, whatever it is, thinking to themselves that exact thing and not even telling us?
Right.
And like if we don't do something about that, if we don't get ahead of that, they're just waiting for the disruptor to come in and take us out of business.
Yep. Exactly.
It's crazy. So anyways, what you were saying reminded me of that, because I think oftentimes too, those things are happening and people aren't innovating. Nobody's telling them. So they're not responding to customer inquiries or bad customer feedback. They're just not responding because people aren't saying anything.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, thank you for indulging me in that story. It just makes me laugh every time I think about it because it was just so funny. So you've got this big industry. You go in. Why do you think they come to you to talk about innovation?
Well, I think part of it's the culture we've built here at Flitters. We've gotten a pretty good reputation nationally for what we've been able to do. And it's not just, you know, yes, it's creating a great place to work, but I think people see us doing some cool stuff as well. And I think the IQE is really appealing as well.
What makes you say that?
Well, when you can give somebody a tool that they can take to all of their team members, that then those team members have something that they can, learn a little bit more about themselves. I think assessments are extremely popular and people want that information. And I love the IQE because it's unique. It's different from a Myers-Briggs or a personality assessment. It is very niche focused on innovation and how we innovate. And so I think that innovation is such a buzzword. People are excited about that and excited to find out, hey, how am I going to be most innovative? And where does my team stand? And so there's been a lot of excitement about that among within the catering industry and a lot of the people that I talk to.
It's interesting. You said two things in there that I think are really important. One is the IQE, the Innovation Quotient Edge Assessment that tells you how you innovate, if you haven't listened to the other podcasts. It does such a great job of making innovation tangible for people. To your point about it being such this, you know, we talk about in these very high theory, don't be afraid to fail, experiment. But this is the one way that you can say, oh, this is how I do it, and I can actually make this happen. And the second part, I think to what you said is about how they have something really to walk away with and do when they get back. And both of those I think are really important. in innovation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So keep going. So I'm curious, like what, when you're up there talking and you're out there in the hospitality and events industry, what are they telling you that having more innovation, having the IQE can do for them?
Well, I think in the catering industry specifically, innovation tends to be pretty isolated toward the food. And it's the chef's job to come up with creative new menu items, right? And so I try to talk about innovation from, you know, how are you operating as a company? And food should just be one part of that.
Yeah.
You know, we have our menu task force that isn't just our culinary team. It's people on the sales team. It's people on the service team. It's people from the production and warehouse that are all getting together talking about how a new item could potentially be implemented and what the drawbacks could be on that item. And so when you think about the fact of, you know, great, that's nice, the kitchen wants to come up with this, you know, another beef option. But if the sales team isn't having any requests for beef and they need more, you know, buffalo or bison options, then they're going to push for that. And if, you know, we're providing too many items on picks and sticks that have to be collected by our service team is going to chime in and say, yeah, we can do that. But it really gets difficult to bus all those come around when we're passing hors d'oeuvres. So it's a great process that happens within our team that's maybe a little bit different than other caterers. But then taking a step back from that, thinking about innovation as the company of a whole, and how are you taking a time to work on your company and not just focus on the events that you have coming up this week. Catering tends to, you know, start out with the, you know, home chef or the even the trained chef. A lot of catering businesses start out of a, you know, home kitchen and somebody that can cook and goes and wants to start doing parties. And, you know, my dad started doing it out of the restaurant. And so there's a lot of really good chefs in the industry, but they don't necessarily always spend the time that they probably should on their business. And they focus too much of the time on just executing the events they get booked and not thinking about how what the processes of event flow is throughout their company. And so they grow to a pretty good level, but ultimately run into some hurdles once they get to a certain point where they need a lot of that.
You know, I think that is so true for a lot of innovators and entrepreneurs, really, that they're really good at their product, their service, whatever it is that they are passionate about, but mm-hmm. not good at the business. And you're right. I think particularly in your world, that innovation tends to happen in the food. And I'm going to say something that's going to sound horribly rude to anyone listening in hospitality and events. So bear with me for a second. But I think the food can be freaking amazing. But if everything else doesn't work, I don't care.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so like, I don't care that you have the best food if your team doesn't bring me that creative experience.
Well talked about throughout the
industry. Okay, good. I don't feel so bad.
That if you have great food with bad service, you're probably not going back to that restaurant. You know, and on the flip side, if you have great service and they make it right and figure out a way, you'll go back to that restaurant and try again. And so we always talk about, yeah, it has to be hand in hand, especially for us. We've got to have great food and we have to have great service. It can't be one or the other.
Yeah.
However, service, we put a huge emphasis on that in knowing that that's something that can overcome a lot of tough situations.
Oh, my gosh. Isn't that the truth? I mean, I think that's true in any business that you're in.
Yes.
And the other thing I found is some of the best innovation happens when I have a conversation with an extremely dissatisfied customer. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds crazy because none of us really want them, but they happen. You kids, it happens. But if I tackle that head on and with authenticity and like a true curiosity and wanting to understand what happened and fixing it for them, it mm-hmm. also leads to great innovation. I don't know if you find that too.
Yes. Yeah, I totally agree.
So I want to ask you, I've seen some of kind of what you speak about when you're out there kind of in the world and the hospitality events conferences, but what are three of those points or pieces of advice that you think really resonate with the people you're speaking to? Can you share those with us so we can kind of get that advice too?
Yeah. I mean, I think the big one that I start with is the misconceptions of innovation and kind of try to break it down get people away from this idea that innovation has to be, you know, only one person's job,
right?
And that's just our creative guy, you know.
And he's got a blue streak in his hair, right? And he's super cool.
Exactly. Let him come up with all the innovative ideas. So we you know, talk a little bit about the fact that it really should be everybody's responsibility. In a couple of the other misconceptions that you know, and we've talked at length about this, but you know, you can't just reward the successes, you have to reward the process.
Yeah.
And as people are advancing something, rewarding them along the way, as opposed to just whatever that end result is. And then, you know, that continuous improvement, that's really the focus and the path to innovation, as opposed to that magic lightning in a bottle, got a new idea and it's gold. Which very rarely happens, but I think people expect that out of innovation. So that's, I think, the big piece that I start with is what are those misconceptions? Try to break that down and create a clear path for people to see, you know, how they can bring a little bit more innovation to their company. Love talking about the IQE. I think it resonates with people. They're excited about it. They're excited to learn about it. And then that kind of tails into how do you utilize the IQE. And so from there, you know, talking about how you put a task force together or right. How you use the exercise, the look for ways. You know, the science of our brain wanting to make associations, right?
Yeah.
So if we, you know, see something we've never seen before and don't know what it is, automatically our brain is trying to match it to something that's similar or something that we do know. And so you always say that innovation happens at the intersection of random. I always push, how do you create more randomness? How do
yeah.
you put ideas out there and things out there that confuse people a little bit, that force them to take whatever that is and tie it to something they do know, and then build from there. And so I think that can be kind of a fun process as well. I do an exercise a lot with some of my audiences where I'll put six very random pictures up on the screen, and I'll ask them, you know, what ties these six pictures together? What's the story? And you know, usually there's crickets. No one said anything because they're so random. And there's, you know, you're looking at them like, I have no idea. Like, how, what is? But the problem is everybody's looking for the right answer. And they're
yes,
trying to say
right
what
away.
The answer is. And then when I reframe it and I say, okay, what if I told you that these six pictures have no story that ties them together? What would you say that story could be? And
oh,
all of a sudden you give people permission to say random things. And they say, well, there's, you know, they all have oversized objects in them and like, great, cool. Well, they're all on that slide. Great, cool. What else? And all of a sudden, you know, there's some dialogue and people aren't afraid to throw out an idea. And it kind of goes back to what we've talked about of are you only rewarding the outcome and the right answer? Or are you, you know, giving people the permission to say there's no right answer here. Just give me an answer. Give me what you think. And so I think that's kind of a fun exercise that pushes people into this mindset of what innovation could look like within their company.
That's so interesting. I'm sitting here like mouth agape a little bit, thinking, like visualizing the exercise. And I'm wondering kind of, I'm sure their faces just change when you go from like, what do they have in common? Which I start to feel like those old magazines with those pictures, and I would be so frustrated because I'd be like, I don't know what changed. I can't figure it out. I only have four things and there's five. But to your point, you're looking for the right answer, the quote unquote right answer, which in innovation doesn't happen. It's not how it actually works. You need to go wide, right? And then come back and go deep. And to your point in the last podcast, sometimes you need the bad ideas first to get to the good one. So you don't have room for that. Do you think kind of letting it be a little bit more, for lack of a better way to say it, free for all of like, all right, guys, room to play, lie, like there's nothing in common. So tell me what it is, you know, make a story up. And there's something in the story language versus what do they have in common. So I'm trying to deconstruct a little bit what happened there. So will you walk us through that? Because there's two things happening there.
Yeah. I mean, that permission that there's no right answer, all of a sudden I look at it as people were using a very small part of their brain to try to come up with what that right answer is. And all of a sudden, like when you told them, that there was a, you know, no right answer. It's like the floodgates open and it's like, oh, okay, I can just relax now.
Right.
And just make,
because I'm not going to be wrong.
Anything is good.
Yeah.
And so that all of a sudden is an amazing a thing that people all of a sudden throw out ideas and they're willing to share and they're willing to talk about something that could be, could associate them all together. So I think giving them that permission and it's very, you know, easy way to give them the okay that there's no wrong answer.
Well, that in itself is huge. You believing to think, okay, I'm not going to be proven wrong. Mm-hmm. In front of my peers, to myself, yep. Whatever. And then I think the other part of that is using the language of what's the story taps mm-hmm. a different part of your brain than what do these things have in common? And you're kind of doing this either or thing with your brain.
Yes. Yes.
Have you heard some crazy stories?
The story kind of leads them into the direction that there is a story and there's one story.
Right.
And so it is kind of, you know, a little bit manipulative from that standpoint. But all of a sudden, there's five stories after the fact that tie them together.
So I want to know what you say about the IQE that gets them so excited to learn. And I might take some notes, Anthony. So I'm thinking and the reason I know it's working, aside from the fact that you're passionate and good about it and you understand the value of, you know, people understanding how they innovate, is we then get calls later, as you know, to say, hey, I want to get this. I heard Anthony speak. I want to get this for my team.
Yeah.
So I'm curious what you're telling people because I might need to take some notes.
I think I like to talk about what the archetypes there are.
Yeah.
And then I also like to highlight how they show up at Footers. So for our team and how some of the people that I've worked with, I was having a great conversation with a she was a salesperson and at first she didn't quite agree that she was imaginative. Mm. And when we went through and started talking about it, she goes, you know what, actually, now that you talk about this, it makes all the sense in the world because my assistant is always confused after I get off the phone with a client that I have a very clear idea of what that proposal should look like and how we need to put that event together.
Even though they don't have all the information, right?
Yeah. And the clients always come back and say, oh, this is exactly what I wanted and exactly what I was hoping for. And she totally put the dots together that's what she was able to do. She was able to take all those pieces of information that the client was kind of saying, and she was able to imagine what that could look like and what they were looking for. And ultimately deliver a proposal that ended up winning her the business, where her assistant was so confused and caught off guard by it. And that was the real, I think, differentiator is that she understood she had this imaginative archetype, but her assistant didn't necessarily have that same same archetype.
Well, and that goes to your kind of the things you've said a few times now about some of the barriers with kind of also how you innovate. And I think with imaginatives, which people who think in the gaps, they don't need all the information and data. In fact, they play best when they've got room. The challenge with that is sometimes the rest of us can't keep up mm-hmm. with their idea. So we have a hard time sometimes understanding what they're talking about because we don't play that way. We need a few more dots to connect before we can get there. And they really have to take a step back and walk us through their thinking for us to be able to get there.
Yes.
I'm curious what other exercises you do, not the details of them, but are there other things that get people to really recognize, oh, hey, like I do innovate this way or I do things differently? And I mean, as you know, I do a building exercise. You've done it several mm-hmm. times now that yep. gets people in tables to really see, oh, my gosh, you're right. Like, so Anthony is a collaborative, kind of pulled everybody in, was like, all right, guys, let's figure it out. Tamara's the risk taker, was already pulling stuff out of her purse before, you know, the person giving the instructions stopped talking, mm-hmm. You know, and the inquisitive was already asking five questions about what is and is not a bounce. So what other ways have you found to bring that out in people to get that recognition beyond the piece of paper and the full report that we give them, which is fantastic, but there's something great about experiencing it.
I would agree with that. That's a good question. I don't know that I've done a great job of putting them in that situation where they really highlight that, but I think just encouraging them to reflect on it and ask them those questions. Like, when do you feel like this comes out? And it's amazing once they kind of reflect on that and they see that. And some people too with that don't necessarily agree. Risk taker is a big one that I've had people that have this connotation that it's, you know, I'm just going to go jump off a cliff and skydive and take all these frivolous risks. And it's not about that. It's about the fact that you're willing to move forward.
Yeah, be uncomfortable. It's okay.
It can be a calculated risk. It doesn't have to be an irresponsible one. But ultimately, you have the strength to push forward and really lead the team in that way. So that's, I think, one of the things that we focus on quite a bit. The other one I mentioned, the look four ways exercise. Yeah. I like to do that when I'm doing presentations because people can kind of start to think about the innovation process in a little bit different way.
Oh, yeah.
And if we put them in groups, then some of those archetypes can come out a little bit where somebody will say something that, you know, a risk taker might say something different than what a futuristic would say. And so people have highlighted that and noticed when that comes. To look for ways, you know, for those that aren't familiar with it, just asks, you know, you come up with a problem or an opportunity that you're facing and you ask yourself four questions. What would a five-year-old say? How would a reporter solve it? How would your favorite brand solve this problem? And how would the opposite of you approach it?
That's always my favorite.
Yeah. And so I think it's kind of cool. The five-year-old one is interesting because if people don't have a five-year-old or familiarity, they really miss the mark on that one.
Oh.
And they think about it from a standpoint. This surprised me a little bit, but it made a lot of sense once I saw it.
Yeah.
They had a very view of how they perceive a five-year-old, not how a five-year-old would perceive the problem.
Oh, because they don't have any experience, of course.
No, I mean,
now that you say that, it makes sense, but I wouldn't have realized that.
And I think we were talking about something about like accountability.
Yeah.
And the group was spot on with it. And they said something like, well, a five-year-old doesn't understand accountability. And so they would, why does it matter? Which was interesting of taking that step back and saying, okay, are we educating our team on the importance of accountability and what that means?
Right.
And so it was a really, great example. Another one that I had on the favorite brand, they were working on compensation packages and how to do comp plans for everybody. And so their favorite brand was Levi's. And they came back with Levi's, they have something that fits everybody and different shapes and sizes for everybody. So we probably need to be thinking about comp plans a little bit different and not so much in this structured A, B, or C, but maybe we need A through F that fit different people for the different jobs they're doing.
Let's talk a little bit about that favorite brands exercise because I actually took a note of it when you were saying earlier about the brain likes to make associations. I think that's part of the reason why this exercise works so well because oftentimes we ask people, okay, so let's use compensation plans. Innovate against compensation plans, go. And you have no springboard or no association to bring back. But in this exercise, what we tell people to do, as you've done, is say, okay, tell me about your favorite, most innovative brand, like the one that you could talk my ear off about, whether that's Levi's, CrossFit, your favorite sports team, whatever. How would they approach this? What can you learn from them? What do they do that's so innovative? And I don't know if you found this too, but when you do that exercise, it is so easy for people to bring that innovation back to their world. Like it's amazing how easy it is because they get all geeked out and excited talking about Levi's and then they can actually go, okay, now I'm going to pull that information back to my world.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so cool. And Levi's is, I love that they have something for everybody, which they totally do. I'd kind of forgotten about that, but it's true.
Yeah.
I got to go buy some Levi's now. That's pretty exciting. The other thing, you made the point about reflection, which I do think is really important. And I don't know that we spend enough time thinking about how does my archetype translate into what I actually do, how I behave, and how can I adjust it or how am I sabotaging it? Because, I'm a collaborative and here I am working solo. So how do I shift the things to make myself, to put myself in a position of strength and to use my innovation? And I recently did an IQE package with one of the most recognizable fast food chains. And as I was talking to her about it, one of the challenges that they had was that you've got three different teams that have to work together, the culinary team, the innovation team, the marketing team. And there's not a lot of trust and kind of respect among the team of what every person brings. They did the IQE, but one of the things that we had them do is not just reflect on themselves, and you may already do this. We had them each say what somebody else on the team brought to the table as a collaborative tweaker, as an inquisitive risk taker. And mm-hmm. And having that conversation, not just about themselves, but about other people, really got them to understand, oh, okay, this is how you add value to the process that we all have to go through.
Sure. Yeah.
So I don't know if you guys do that, but it was a very cool experience.
Yeah, and after we did the IQE, we had everybody really think about how what they were going to do differently individually as a team, and then in terms of the workflow, what do we need to shift here to be more innovative and to be better?
All right, Anthony, I know we're out of time. So what's one last piece of advice you have for people out there trying to build a culture of innovation?
Well, I think it starts with, you know, believing in your people. They'll feel that, you know, we hounded on it a number of times that you can't just reward those outcomes. But once people are in a situation where they truly feel valued, they're comfortable in what they're doing, they're not afraid for their job, you free them up to be in a safe spot where they're more willing to contribute potentially amazing ideas to your company. So the more you can do to put people in a situation that really they feel safe, they're going to give that back in spades.
Anthony, this has been a bundle of fun. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Tamara. It's always a pleasure, and I truly appreciate you having me.
I know. I almost don't have words. It's always so good, isn't it? So great. All right, Launch Readers, if you want to have that edge that Anthony has, if you want to apply innovation to your world and the world around you, here's what I like to suggest. I know you've heard me say before, go to our website and go get the assessment, take it and unlock your innovation advantage. Absolutely, I want you to do that. But here's what I'd rather you do this time. I'd rather you got a team pack and you together found a way to solve those challenges and go after those opportunities. When you as a team, so you and the people that you work with, whether they're above you, below you, at the same level, doesn't matter. But when you as a team come together and understand how each of you innovate differently and how you can leverage each other and yourself, the power of the innovation just has exponential growth to it. So go to our website, go to launchstreet.com, GOTOLaundry.com. Get a team pack of assessments. You can do that by reaching out to us directly or buying it online. We're happy to talk to you about your challenges. So call me if you need to talk. But really, I cannot emphasize enough, when you are dealing with the challenges and the changes that Anthony and I just talked about, and I know many of you are because I do a lot of keynotes in a lot of industries, it's pervasive, right? The rate of change that we're dealing with. But innovation is how you get ahead. It's how you make change actually a positive thing for you and your teams. Okay, Tamara out.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on GoToLaunchStreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. GoToLaunchStreet.com.